permits. Tom, you and Jackie handling that?
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling, Tom Kirschman, Director of the Wildlife Division. Wanted to just briefly visit with you on a topic of Canada geese depredation, kill permits, and licenses in general. This is a follow-up to Commissioner Beast. You had mentioned this at the last Commission meeting. You and I had a brief opportunity to further discuss when the Commission meeting concluded last month. So we just pulled together a few pieces of information that I'm going to go over with you and then just share a few perspectives from that overall topic of discussion. So going back to the Commission meeting last month, Commissioner Beast in particular asked the question, you know, we deal a lot with Canada goose depredation, obviously in the eastern part of the state. Is there a mechanism or a means to have more licenses out there to help address the issue, lowering goose numbers, versus all of the work and the dollars and the emphasis that we put into our depredation program itself? So that's what I'm going to talk about a little bit here and give you a perspective of what's going on, what licenses are available, and just to try to articulate why we do some of the things that we do. So first, I'm going to ask you to turn to the second page where it talks about Canada goose expenditure service and population. Just as a quick overview, every year we deal with Canada goose depredation requests for service in the eastern part of the state. Some years are more, some years are less. This year happened to be one of those years where I would call it a banner year of requests for services. We had a high number of population of resident Canada geese. We had, at the same time, high commodity prices, in particular soybeans. And so the tolerance level was even less this year, and requests for services came in at a higher level. So quickly, you can see there expenditures. Looking back over time, you can see a huge spike there in 2012, where we had spent over $700,000 in one year on Canada goose depredation efforts, working with landowners through our various programs and services that we provide. 2021, you can see there a big jump of what we're estimating right now is going to be at about $400,000. It'll likely be more than that. We don't have everything combined and tallied just yet, but at least to date, that's about where we're at. It'll be over $400,000. The bottom graph there shows you with the red line and the blue line, the population index and then those requests for service. And you can see that they follow each other very well. As the local resident Canada goose population goes up, those requests for services also go up. And that is no surprise to us. And just quickly there, you'll see the red line, which shows the spring population index. There is no index for the last 2 years because we obtained that number from the Fish and Wildlife Service when they do their May pond counts. In the last 2 years, they have not concluded them or conducted them because of COVID. But we anticipated that there was going to be a high number of resident Canada geese for this spring population, even though we don't have that estimate. And that is hence why we implemented the August management take this year again in multiple counties in eastern South Dakota, knowing that our requests for services were likely going to go up as well as a means to help lower the resident Canada geese population. The last page that I turn your attention to before I go back to the license side of things gives you a breakdown this year that our staff put together of the various requests for services by the number by county and then the number of cooperators. And if you look at 2021, this year we had, again, where we're at 584 requests for services from 404 different landowners in eastern South Dakota. And you can see by the individual counties, where some of our hotspots are at in terms of requests for service. But there's a lot of work that goes into this. I will share with you real quickly, our wildlife damage specialists, our interns, our seasonals that we had on this year did a phenomenal job working with those landowners trying to address those depredation issues. There was a lot of miles of electric fence that have gone up, a lot of services, and honestly, they can't even get to every single request that comes out and do everything that they want. In some cases, they have to provide the the materials to the landowners and they take care of it themselves. But they did an outstanding job again, and our hats off to them for all the work that they did, because for about a month and a half, it is nonstop on a daily basis and really trying to address those depredation issues of those landowners. So that, I want to take you back to your first page and talk a little bit about and more address what Commissioner Beast's original question was. Is there a way to put out more licenses to help address this depredation issue and the issuance of kill permits? So in the grand scheme, I want to make sure that we're all on the same page when it comes to the perspective of licenses. So when we talk about licenses that are available out there, obviously our resident goose hunters buy their small game hunting licenses and they're required a federal duck stamp and the migratory bird certification. On the other hand, when it comes to non-resident waterfowl hunters, there are some different licenses that come into play here, and I want to make sure everybody understands those. So we have the non-resident waterfowl hunting licenses, the 4,000 that are the statewide licenses essentially for 10 days, and then we also have the 2,000 three-day temporary licenses. The majority of those licenses are specifically for duck hunting. Now, obviously, there are some goose hunting opportunities that come in with that. But again, those licenses, when they're issued to the non-resident, that is with and applied to the regular duck season, which is going to start essentially the fourth weekend of the month of September. When we talk about Canada goose depredation, we're talking about depredation that occurs in May, June, and into July. And that's those resident Canada geese that are breeding, bringing on those goslings as they grow. They're going out and grazing in particular on soybean fields. So the tools that we have from a licensing and season perspective to help address the resident Canada goose population, as I just mentioned a few moments ago, we use the August management take, which is not part of the federal framework, but it's a tool that's available to us that we can implement in the month of August to harvest resident Canada geese. And again, this year we did implement that in multiple counties in eastern South Dakota, again, assuming that those numbers were going to go up. Then we also have the early fall September season, which starts September 1 and essentially goes until the regular waterfowl season begins on that fourth Saturday of the month of September. Again, our resident hunters can just have their normal hunting waterfowl license and participate in the August management take and then the September season as well. From the non-resident side of things, in the early fall September season, we actually do offer 2,000 licenses that are available to non-resident hunters for the month of September to come into South Dakota and hunt specifically Canada geese. I will tell you and share with you over the past 5 years, the average number of those licenses that we have issued is right at about 285 of the 2,000. The reasons for that, what we believe, are probably a couple of explanations. Number one, the non-residents that would come into South Dakota to participate in the September season likely are not coming here because they also have that same type of season in the state that they're coming from. Most of these folks most likely would be coming from surrounding states, and they too have Canada goose populations that are doing very well and likely participating closer at home to do that. Secondly, we do have in administrative rule right now, there are 13 counties in the southeast corner of the state where non-residents are not allowed to hunt during the early fall September season. And that's primarily in that southeastern corner of the state, and what we call our administrative region, Region 3 or the southeast region. That has been in place for numerous years, and a lot of that impetus behind there has been concern from resident hunters, and allowing non-resident hunters to come in will likely take away those goose hunting places, in particular, small grain harvested fields, and take away those opportunities from resident hunters. Obviously, the number of small grain fields in southeast South Dakota is way less than when you go into the northeast part of the state, and that has been one of those discussion points over the years. There have been a few attempts to remove that restriction, and I would offer to you that we're going to continue to have that conversation and looking at that piece and opening up that availability for non-residents to participate in the southeast corner of the state. But that's something that is an action that can be taken by you as the commission, because that's an administrative rule. we're looking at that and other relative waterfall hunting season structures as it relates to residents, non-residents. We'll have some of those discussions coming up in the future. But I just wanted you to understand that there are opportunities for non-residents to come in and hunt in South Dakota. We have 2,000 licenses available. Again, on average, about 285 over the last 5 years have taken advantage of those. 2020, we did see a little bump, in about 460 of those licenses were issued to non-resident hunters. To date, we're at 218. So, well, I'm guessing we'll probably see that number grow a little bit and be very similar to that five-year average, probably less than 300 of the 2,000 being taken advantage of in South Dakota. So I share all that information with you from the standpoint of the next discussion topic of we use kill permits that we issue to landowners to help address Canada goose depredation issues. This is a tool that we've been using for probably a handful of years right now. We started out fairly slow and it has quickly grown. And probably the thing that I can offer to you, the best part about the kill permits that we issue to the landowners is it can be an immediate response. Those landowners are out there, they see depredation occurring on their field, they have that permit in hand, they have the ability to go ahead and legally remove Canada geese from that field. It also works very well in a scare tactic, a dispersal tactic, and gets those geese out there. Commissioner Whitmire, we've had conversations about that and how valuable of a tool that can be. And we continue to see that tool increase in numbers. If you look on your front page there, you'll see on the kind of the bottom right-hand side, the kill permits by region for 2017 through 2021. And then there's also a line there that shows the total permits. You can see for 2021, we were at 500 or over 500 kill permits that we issued to landowners this year. You can see the breakdown by region. And you can see over the last couple of years, that number has grown from about 400 to a little over 500. You know, these kill permits are issued to a large number of landowners. On that permit, they can designate to us, and we can include in that permit a couple other people to help them and assist them in utilizing that permit. And it's worked very, very well. I would share with you, for example, in the state of North Dakota. North Dakota, when it comes to Canada goose depredation, the only tool that's essentially used are the kill permits, and that's what the State Wildlife Agency issues the landowners with USDA Wildlife Services. They don't have the electric fence program that we do. They don't have the buffer programs that we do, permanent fences that we offer, all the different things. They rely solely, basically, on those kill permits. And that has been a great tool for us in trying to address those issues. And then you can see the take from those kill permits. And this year, we don't have the final numbers yet, as we're still tallying some of that from the landowners. But you can see in 2020, we had just under 1,500 total geese taken. And the numbers that I've seen to date right now that we have received, again, we're still collecting from landowners, approximately at 1,200. So I expect that number to grow as well. That's not a huge, significant number of geese removed from the overall resident Canada goose population, but it's certainly a valuable tool that those landowners can use to help address depredation issues as they occur on the ground. So I guess to kind of wrap this up, you know, from a tool to help address the depredation issue from a license perspective, probably our best tool that we have is the utilization of the August management take in the early fall September season, where we are focusing harvest on resident Canada geese and the geese produced in South Dakota and the local areas. With the implementation of August management take, our approach is again to lower that Canada goose population, bring those levels down. We're never going to bring it down to the level that's going to completely eliminate depredation. I will never give that false impression, but by bringing that population down, those numbers down, will certainly help alleviate some of the depredation issues. We'll continue to use those. The challenge is the depredation occurs in May and June and early July, and there are no hunting seasons and the ability to go out and remove and eliminate geese then. And that's where those kill permits really come into play and are such a useful tool. But we will continue to use, like the August management take, the early fall September season, to focus on harvest of resident Canada geese. And then, again, see if there's opportunities to allow some more opportunities for if a few more non-residents want to come in and participate in the early fall September season to remove geese, that would be fine, and continue to encourage our local hunters here in South Dakota to get out and take advantage of those hunting opportunities. So that, Mr. Chairman, I just want to give a kind of a general overview of depredation, the kill permits, how they play into the licenses that we have available as well, and just the grand picture of where we're at and the direction we're going. With that, I'll try to answer any questions that commissioners may have.
Any questions?
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Bartling. Tom, do you have a breakdown of the expenditures by region? I know you've got the total here, but...
Commissioner Bartling, we will have that probably over the next month or so as we're still pulling a few of those things together, but we will get you the final expenditures of what that looks like, and we can break it down by the location in the state, and we'll also break it down by the different services and programs we do, it from, you know, electric fencing to permanent fences to buffers to, and a lot of the expenditures, honestly, is staff time, because we bring on a lot of seasonal and interns to assist in that program, so a lot of it is manpower, mileage, those types of things as well.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Yeah, spot on with the kill permits. They kill permits, it's, I guess, in my view and my experience, it's more forgiveness for shooting into a group of geese. They're very trainable. You could drive by them day in, day out of tractors. They hardly, you know, they just move out of the way. But, you know, when you get out, discharge a firearm, and land a bullet, so to say, amongst them, they do not return. They really learn well, and that's a great tool. So, yeah, thank you on the kill permits. Yeah, it's pretty much appreciated by operators. And again, it's not, you know, the intention isn't to kill, it's training, you know, in most cases. I guess I can't speak to everybody, but certainly in my experience, it's been very effective. It's more of a forgiveness if it should happen to him. But anyway, so thank you to staff. I know they work hard. It was a hot summer. It was challenging. With those geese, they portage. I've seen them go a quarter mile across grass to get to the next water hole. You know, so you don't have any geese in a water hole. The next day, you've got 40, 50. It's just, it's really a diverse and changing issue. So thank you for all the work. Thanks for their department, I guess, for supporting this. So, but on questions, the unit, so the 285 average non-residents that come in, do you think they're here for fishing as well, or do you believe that they are here? I mean, it's kind of a question. I should have given you a little time on that. But it's, like you said, there are geese widely distributed, and they've got them at home, probably in most cases. But do you think they might already be here for other purposes?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Whitmire, you'd have to go in and dive maybe in some of the other details that we get with those licenses. My guess is the majority of them are coming in for a weekend or a couple of days and really focusing on the Canada goose hunting versus goose hunting and fishing and probably some other activities, although wouldn't doubt if there's some folks that are doing multiple activities on that trip as well. I'd have to visit maybe with staff, local staff, and seeing the hunters that are out there, maybe they'd have a better idea, indication as to if they're really focusing on the goose hunting part of it, or are they doing multiple activities in that trip. We'll see if we can tease some of that out and get back to you on that, but I just don't have a very good handle on it at the moment.
Yeah, follow up on that. When I look at the other section where we currently don't allow it, I was just trying to speculate on what kind of participation we might get out of that, what kind of effect we might have on the population in the long run, or if it just offsets what we're getting from our residents. So.
Commissioner Whitmire, from the standpoint of the numbers from the non-residents, I think the important thing would look at that being added on to what our resident harvest is and look at the totality of it from the perspective of harvest and to help bring the resident cannabis population down more into objective range or at a little bit lower level. So I think collectively they do help. But just to look at those 285 from the non-resident portion of it, I would say would not, but collectively they have an impact on those efforts.
Any other questions?
Commissioner Lockett here. Is it conceivable to just have open it up for any residents that has permission to get on the land to just let them take these geese, grass them off without a permit. It's a busy time of the year, and generally it's like any other problem you have with the crop, you find it too late. Is there possible we could just say go ahead and not have to issue a permit? The population seems to be rising every year, and not through any fault of anybody, it's just that's the way it is.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Lockin, a quick thought and response would be no, and here's the reason why. Number one, when we think of that May, June, July timeframe, number one, from a federal framework standpoint of quote-unquote hunters being out there, that's not within the framework for allowance of hunting per se and harassing and scaring them off. Number two, the permits that are issued to the landowners does go through a stringent process with the Fish and Wildlife Service in the federal level, and it is specific to address depredation and specific to the landowners themselves. And so those permits go to landowners. They can have a few designees on there to assist them, knowing that they could be busy. But just to open it up and say anyone and everyone can go out there, we would not have that ability to do that, in particular because we're dealing also with a migratory species here.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Beef.
Commissioner Beef, has there been the department has done anything to entice more non-residents to come in and use those tags? Like there's a gentleman up north of Kimball that has a pheasant lodge where he has numerous people want to come in and hunt waterfowl at the same time that they're pheasant hunting. Is there any way to reach out to them type of lodges that are bringing people in and offer them, say, hey, here's an opportunity, you know, for your people, or has the department done anything like that?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Beef, that's a good question. You know, from the standpoint of truly advertising and promotion of those licenses in September, that's something that we can do more of, and we need to look at what would be some of those opportunities. Again, where those hunts are going to primarily happen, the example you use in that Kimball area is going to be a whole lot less, and there's just not the issues there like we see over there in the Northeast and the Southeast. But we'll certainly look at those avenues and venues, how we can make more people aware of them and for more participation on those 2,000 licenses that are available. In the grand scheme, that'll certainly help us in our depredation efforts and with our harvest attempt as well.
One other thing is for the daily bag lemon, I'm sure there's one.
Yes.
What about a lemon date, Matt, until we get the numbers down?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Beef, that's always a tough conversation when we talk about geese. And you know, in particular, for example, when you consider the light goose or snow goose population, there are states that have an unlimited daily bag limit. There are states that have had daily bag limits of 25, 50, and various numbers because you have the ability, in particular in that spring conservation order, to do that. Where some concerns come into place when you put an unlimited daily bag limit on, whether it's spring or snow geese or, in this case, resin canada geese, is that where does that end up going then when you have that quote unquote unlimited daily bag limit? The perception by some is that you've really decreased the quote unquote value of it, and just from a game species out there. There's always the concern of a bunch of wanton waste because you're just going to have people going out there and shooting them down, not respecting them, not using them, not collecting them, those types of things. So there's always that concern over the perception of when you go unlimited. Right now, for example, in the August management take, we have a daily bag limit of 15. We get questions about having a daily bag limit of 15. The reason we have that is because this is a concerted effort to bring the numbers down the resident Canada goose population to within objective. But even at 15, that's a lot of geese. When you're out there hunting and you get a group of four or five or six individuals and you hit the right field on the right morning, you can have a lot of geese in a short amount of time. And so we think of those things. We hear that from our hunters and from the public as well. And so it's a balancing act to be cognizant of that. How can we be very successful in bringing it down, but yet have the acceptance of not going too far with a daily bag,
daily bag limit or having an unlimited limit?
Any other questions?